The Bible says when they say peace and security, then sudden destruction will come. Are we seeing the rumblings of peace and security? We will discuss it.
Trump has confirmed the U.S. would be involved in security guarantees for Ukraine as part of a deal to end the war with Russia. The comments came during a historic meeting involving several European leaders, Ukraine's President Zelensky, and Mr. Trump at the White House.
It's an honor to have the President of Ukraine with us. We've had a lot of good discussions, a lot of good talks.
Welcome to Understanding the Times Radio with Pastor Josh Schwartz and Ken Michael, Radio for the Remnant, brought to you by Olive Tree Ministries. In our program, Pastor Josh and Ken talk to Pete Garcia, a retired combat veteran and aviator. Leaders are gathering to obtain peace in Russia and Ukraine and throughout the Middle East. Will this ultimately lead to a 7-year peace plan?
Donald Trump has confirmed the U.S. would be involved in security guarantees for Ukraine as part of a deal to end the war with Russia. The comments came during a historic meeting involving several European leaders, Ukraine's President Zelensky, and Mr. Trump at the White House.
It's an honor to have the President of Ukraine with us. We've had a lot of good discussions, a lot of good talks.
The Ukrainian president handed over a letter from his wife to Melania Trump, who herself has written to President Putin about the plight of Ukrainian children who've been kidnapped to Russia. President Zelensky wants to see a ceasefire in Ukraine. Donald Trump changed his mind about that after he met President Putin.
I don't think you need a ceasefire. You know, if you look at the 6 deals that I settled this year, they were all at war. I didn't do any ceasefires. And I know that it might be good to have, but I can also understand strategically why one country or the other wouldn't want it. You have a ceasefire and they rebuild and rebuild and rebuild and, you know, maybe they don't want that.
European countries will be key to any NATO-style agreement that they would all rally to defend Ukraine in future.
The war in Ukraine has had a huge impact, particularly on the Ukrainians who've borne the brunt of it, but it's also had an impact on Europe and on the United Kingdom. There's not a family or community that hasn't been affected. And when we talk about security, we're talking about the security not just of Ukraine, we're talking about the security of Europe and the United Kingdom as well, which is why this is such an important issue.
They looked at a map of Ukraine's front lines together and discussed what a peace settlement could look like before then joining a wider meeting with all the European leaders who've come here as well, all of whom agreed the next step has to be a 3-way meeting between the US, Ukraine, and Russia.
Welcome to Understanding the Times. I'm Ken Michael, along with Pastor Josh Schwartz, and we are so pleased to welcome back our guest this week. He's a retired military combat vet and aviator. We'd like to welcome back to the program Pete Garcia. Pete, thank you so much for joining us today.
Hey, it's good to be here, guys. Thank you.
So we know in the last days, Jesus talked about what's going to take place in Matthew 24. He said there'll be wars, rumors of wars. History reveals there's always been wars and rumors of wars, but we kind of want to look at these global things that have happened, like World War I, World War II, where you see these global events, nations rising against nations, ethnos against ethnos. And we saw in the last administration that there were a lot of wars going on all at once, such as Gaza, Israel, Israel-Iran, Russia-Ukraine. And as Christians, we're trying to put these pieces together, but the pieces seem to keep moving.
So, Pete, as you look at it right now, what countries are supporting Russia? What countries are supporting Ukraine? And in your opinion, could this turn into another world war?
I don't think this is all going to lead to World War III. I tend to look at this more as like a global Mexican standoff. You've got three spheres of power that are all vying for control, and not just for the here and now. They want long-term control. They want to dominate this century. And you have in the West, the United States leading the charge, but you also have a mixed bag there because you've got EU folks that are very much in favor of globalism, and you've got nationalists mixed in there, like the leaders of Poland, Austria, and Italy. And then you have in Russia, they have their own empire they're trying to project and regain the glory of their former years. And that takes territory, it takes manpower, it takes increasing their birth rates, getting some type of hegemony over some energy source or maybe artificial intelligence or some other thing that they can dominate. and then continue to regain their former empire, all the former Soviet satellite states. Clearly, there's probably some they don't want back, but I'm sure that there are some that they would very much like to have back, like Ukraine. I just think that in the last sphere is going to have to be China's influence. I know they're kind of a declining power in a sense. They're a paper tiger in a lot of ways. They have a declining birth rate, aging population. Their economy is a house of cards, one crisis, and it would unravel a lot of what they're doing. And then with the U.S., their largest trading partner, now turning away and trying to manufacture more and bring all that stuff back here in the States, the increase in tariffs and whatnot. Right now, we're at this junction where all three of these powers are trying to exert long-term influence. The reason that's become more precedent now is because of things like artificial intelligence, quantum supremacy, all the advancements that whoever gains this control first, whoever gains this advantage first, probably will be the ones that dominate the rest of the century, were we to be here that long. But I don't think it's going to blow up into a World War III scenario this side of the rapture.
Yeah, Pete. So in that clip, we heard President Trump, he's actually helped end many of these wars, several wars, and he's mentioned them. And you mentioned the tariffs and his negotiating skills, as he's doing now with Russia and Ukraine. He's trying to negotiate a peace deal. However, if this peace deal in the making doesn't succeed, where does this lead to then?
I think we're going to see kind of a detente between now and the rapture. It's like waiting for the other shoe to fall. We're waiting and we're waiting, and it seems like something of significance is going to happen, and then it doesn't. And with the exception of Israel's actions against Iran and Lebanon and Hamas and the Houthis, and then even the joint U.S. strike in Iran, the West has been holding back, and I think Israel's been holding back from unleashing the true fury and power that are the West, and I would include this in this condition, the U.S. and Israel have in this. And they definitely demonstrated that in Operation Rising Lion, as well as the joint strikes on Iran's nuclear and military capabilities. We're a very powerful coalition between Israel and the United States, if it were just those two countries. But I honestly think that things are going to be kind of at a detente until the rapture. And I think the rapture is going to be the global crisis that will open the floodgates for like an Ezekiel 38 type scenario, because with the U.S. and the West largely in disarray, the enemies of Israel, who are not going to be as impacted by the religions and things that they hold to in those countries, namely Islam and atheism and whatnot, that they'll come against Israel and they'll look at this as the prime opportunity to strike them. But also seems to line up with Paul's writing in 1 Thessalonians 5, that they're going to say peace and safety, and then sudden destruction comes upon them. But that all comes after the rapture. And I think the rapture is going to be the world's perfect global crisis that's going to allow all these things to happen.
So, Pete, we're hearing a lot of stuff online about some crazy accusations that are going out against President Trump, that he's this ultimate peacemaker. And there are many people who are really nailing him down and putting him as their key target for the Antichrist. So let's silence this once and for all, Pete. Is President Trump the Antichrist because of all the peace that he is pushing all throughout the world?
No, not unless he was born within the confines of the boundaries of the old Roman Empire. He wasn't. He was born in Queens, New York. So no, he can't be, because Daniel 9:26 is very clear that this man that comes, this Antichrist, this man of lawlessness, the son of perdition, he is going to come from somewhere out of the boundaries of the old Roman Empire. So there's a large area where this man can come from, but it's not the United States, nor is it Queens. Now, here's what I will say about Trump and why he is such a fascinating leader, is that he seems to be the archetypal once-in-a-generation leader that the Europeans are clamoring for. They want their own version of Trump. And they've wanted for a very long time a strong leader like that to unite all of the countries together. And here is this guy named Trump, who was a political icon or societal or cultural icon even before he became president. But now that he served one term successfully, then he had everything thrown at him, to include two assassination attempts, and come out on top fighting and winning victoriously in this 2024 election. They want their own Trump because they want to unify all of Europe into a singular country like the United States. And right now they're too fractious. They're fighting over all their current problems, such as unchecked immigration, crime, the economy, inflation, AI taking jobs. So they're struggling right now. So it is going to take a massive crisis to level the playing field. And then out of that crisis, I believe, is what will rise a European version of Donald Trump, except he will be the Antichrist. I see him as somebody that they really want very badly to be leading them, because you've got a bunch of beta males running it right now with Macron and Steimer, and they see how much this alpha male leadership has done. He's imposed his tariff wills across the world. He's imposing peace in various conflicts, not just with Israel and Hamas, but also Russia, Ukraine, probably coming up, Cambodia, Thailand, Pakistan. And so there's a number of countries that he stepped in and said, hey, this is a really bad idea. Let's find a solution where both sides win. And it seems to be working. I think he is the archetypal guy that the Europeans very much want and will probably get immediately after the rapture.
I couldn't agree more with you, Pete. As I've traveled across the world, people are fascinated with Donald Trump. They want to know what's going on here. They want to know what he's doing. They want to know what Americans think about him. Many can't understand why there's this huge push against a lot of his policies. So staying on the topic, we know that both Russia and Ukraine are going to have to make concessions. They're going to have to give something up. And it looks like Ukraine may have to give up a large part of the country, including the Donbas region, which is rich in minerals. We know that it's a very strategic part of that country. And even though Ukraine won't be a part of NATO, those countries, along with the U.S., are saying they're going to provide security assurances. What's that going to look like? Will there be a U.S. base in Ukraine ultimately, or where do you see this going?
Given Putin's and Trump's relationship, I think it's possible, or some type of a military presence there that may not be full boots on the ground, but it may be some type of robust diplomatic corps there, or some version of that that functions as not necessarily peacekeepers, but observers, people that are reporting everything that's happening. And that goes real time back to Trump or whoever the president will be after him. I think given his relationship with Putin, it's possible. Now, this was not possible under Biden. It wasn't possible with Obama. It wasn't possible. It might have been possible with Bush, but certainly not the Clintons and beyond. I don't think that we'll have necessarily the time to see this play out long term. And also, I just think that the way that Trump ends up solving this situation is removing all of the sanctions against Russia in exchange for maybe giving some portion back of the Donbas or something that will appease the Ukrainians on that side. Or splitting it between the Donbas region, splitting it in half so that one side keeps it and the other side remains Ukrainian so they can share. They don't really care necessarily about the citizens and the towns that are there. They care about the mineral wealth that's under the ground there. They may split that as well as remove all of the sanctions or a majority of the sanctions so that Russia can actually start to thrive again. And that might also defuse some of the stuff rising up with BRICS.
It'll be interesting to see how this plays out.
Now, as we transition here, we are seeing a lot all over the world about this new peace plan in Gaza and what Israel is to do next. So we want to play a quick clip and then get your response.
Last week, tens of thousands of Israelis protested their government's plan to occupy Gaza City.
Across the country, crowds gathering and businesses shutting down in solidarity. Demonstrators urging Israel's leaders to make a deal for the hostages who have been held captive for nearly 2 years since that October 7th attack.
Political demands to end the war. Polling shows that the Israeli public are firmly in favor of striking a ceasefire deal in Gaza. Recent INSS polling found that 81% of Jewish Israelis do not think it's possible for Israelis and Palestinians to live together with full civic equality, while Pew polling from earlier this year found that only 21% of Israelis think Israel and a Palestinian state can coexist peacefully. Whenever and however the war eventually ends, and even after Netanyahu eventually faces what looks set to be an electoral reckoning, there'll still be deep unresolved divisions both within Israeli society and between Israelis and Palestinians.
You're listening to Understanding the Times, the program founded by Jan Markell. I'm Ken Michael, along with Pastor Josh Schwartz. Our guest today is Pete Garcia. So, Pete, we're seeing this huge division in Israel, just like there is here in the United States. A lot of protesters and protesting going on in Israel. The large majority of people there want their hostages back, and they're willing to do anything to get that, including a ceasefire and even a two-state solution. What do you think the Israeli government needs to do to get through this?
I think Trump was given Netanyahu the green light to go ahead and finish this with military action. And I think that they will do that. And I know the longer they wait, the worse it's going to get politically for the Netanyahu administration. Now, the problems with just going in and obviously doing a full assault, driving the Hamas out of the remaining hidey holes they've been in, is that you kill all the hostages in the process, the ones that are still alive. And they're not many. and they're in very terrible shape. So they're running out of time. So I think this is going to happen sooner rather than later. Now, it's hard to say why they're pausing now. I do know that upcoming in September, the UN is going to be voting on whether to recognize a Palestinian state. And I think that the Israelis are not going to wait until then to rescue the hostages. A lot of what's happening now will decide the fate of what will become of Gaza and what will become of Judea and Samaria, and whether the Israelis annex it officially this time, based on what happens with the UN in September. So if the UN goes ahead and has the vote and tries to push forward a Palestinian state without the United States, I think that that's going to give the green light to Netanyahu to go ahead and annex Judea and Samaria and probably have some type of military control over Gaza. And I think the folks that are there are probably going to have to be moved out to other countries. And maybe some of this is dealing with working out some of the logistics on that with other countries trying to coerce them into taking these Arabs. So it seems like there's a lot of multi-level chess going on right now with so many different fronts, the political front, the diplomatic front, the military front, their own citizenry there, the world vote in September. There's so many factors coming in on this. So let me just conclude with saying that I think the military action will happen sooner rather than later. That will result in them taking military control over Gaza entirely. Now, it's possible that at some point in the future that the United Nations or some other type of entity could come in and have some type of international setup there. But the place is destroyed. You can't build anything there because of all the tunnels and the bombs, and it's just utter ruin. So that whole strip is going to take a really long time just to make it livable again. For the world's standpoint, I don't know why they would argue over who's going to live in Gaza, because nobody's going to live in Gaza until all that stuff gets clear. It's unlivable right now.
Yeah, Pete, I couldn't agree more. We're going to have to pray for the peace of Jerusalem. We know that there ultimately is not going to be a two-state solution, and we know what happens in the end according to the Bible, so we have scripture to lean on for how this all shakes out. As we transition here, I want you to listen to another clip that affects us all here at home, and I want to get your take on it.
I'm announcing a historic action to rescue our nation's capital from crime, bloodshed, bedlam, and squalor, and worse. This is Liberation Day in D.C., and we're going to take our capital back.
Today, West Virginia's governor said he was sending up to 400 National Guard troops to Washington, D.C. at President Trump's request. They'll join soldiers already deployed with D.C. police on the streets of the district. The troops may be armed. That's a major shift that comes after the president deployed them to, quote, take back the Capitol.
We're taking a live look at the Capitol this morning as more National Guard troops make their way to D.C. South Carolina joins two other Republican-led states who have pledged hundreds of troops. This is in support of President Donald Trump's overhaul of policing in the nation's capital city.
We begin with the fight for democracy in Washington, D.C., where protesters flooded the streets to rally against President Trump's federal police takeover.
You're listening to Understanding the Times, the program founded by Jan Markell. I'm Ken Michael, along with Pastor Josh Schwartz. We're here with Pete Garcia. Pete, we're seeing violence and lawlessness, not only worldwide, but really spreading here in this country. And basically what's happening right now is we're having to clean up the mess that Obama and Biden have left behind for the last decade or so. Pete, we're seeing the National Guard being deployed in Washington, D.C. right now, and probably some other cities across the United States. What's your take on deploying our National Guard, not just for safety and security of those, but to assist the police departments?
This has been a long-term plan. Even before we had the label of the deep state, we had certainly people within our government going back to the 1910s that were committed to changing our republic into something else, or embedding us into some type of a global organization or regional organization. Part of their plan was to gut out the inner cities and make them unlivable so that people would be driven out of those. And then they could bring in their own folks to take over these major power centers and control them. We've seen this all over the United States in every major city. It's almost always Democrat led, whether you're talking about Los Angeles, San Francisco, New York City. So part of this tactic by the left follows the principles of the Hegelian dialectic. So you have the thesis, the antithesis, and your synthesis. So the thesis is, how do we exert more control over the American people by getting them to willingly surrender their liberty and freedom for security? And part of that is by encouraging and incentivizing crimes so that the police have to militarize in order to even be on a level playing field with the criminal elements. We saw that with the 1930s, 40s, 50s, 60s, all the way through the 70s with the mafia. And then that broke out into different gangs that started to crop up in the 70s and 80s in the inner cities once they began to become war zones. And the chief war zone was Washington, D.C. I've been there a couple times. I don't recommend going there. It's a rough place to be. And it had the murder capital. It's about time that somebody does that. But it's also part and parcel with the Hegelian dialectic in that the police force, law enforcement in the United States, and you being former, you've seen this, they've become very militarized. And they've had to because they've had to keep up with the criminal element. And when you've got cartels and other people coming in with machine guns and bombs and terrorists, you have to meet the threat with the requisite amount of force. And so I'm seeing the militarization of law enforcement. I know that 99% of law enforcement guys and gals are good people. They're trying to do what's right. It's the system itself that is being moved forward almost to the point of beyond constitutionality when we talk about posse comitatus. So I don't know ultimately where it goes, but it's just a larger trend across that the left and the wicked have allowed lawlessness to flourish, and that in response to that cry out from the people is that they have to militarize the police force. And so we see a shrinking environment where freedoms and liberties are increasingly traded for security and safety.
So, Pete, should other cities use the National Guard to help their crime problems? And with that, what are the positives and the negatives that come along with that?
I don't think it's a good idea just because Trump's doing it, because what if the next person coming in is worse than Kamala Harris or worse than Biden? And we've already established this as some kind of a norm. Can you imagine that being turned around and used against Christians or being used against the law-abiding citizens that don't approve of a particular government action? So I don't think in principle there was a reason why that we have posse comitatus to prevent this very thing. Now, I will say that, for example, what Jack Hibbs is doing in California against this particular school vote, I think communities need to rise up and hold their political leaders accountable for maintaining law and order in their communities. And it needs to be led by churches. It needs to be led by pastors who are not afraid to take a stand on an issue and move forward with it. They will rise up and we can do this. But most of the pulpits are silent. They won't want anything to do with politics because they're afraid of losing their 501c3 status, or they're woke themselves or indoctrinated with woke staff from woke seminaries. I don't think it's a good idea. I think that the communities need to hold their political leaders accountable and start change from that way rather than the heavy-handed, because it could easily be used the next time against us.
And we're seeing this all across the country. I applaud Pastor Jack for what he's doing. I think every church in America should be stepping up and speaking out against these social issues that are confronting mainly our children. That's who they're attacking. That's who Satan's going after. Pete, I want to thank you for joining us today. How can people get in touch with you?
Follow me on YouTube, Rev310, or then go to the website, rev310.net. I'll be speaking at some conferences coming up. We'll post that on Telegram or Facebook. I'm on Instagram as well.
Pete Garcia, thank you for joining us today, and God bless you and your ministry.
Thank you, Ken. It's good being with you guys. You too, Josh.
And to our listeners, make sure if you want to hear the extended version and see it, check us out on our YouTube channel, olivetreeviews.org, Understanding the Times. Yeah, Josh, as believers, we shouldn't be surprised at the violence and lawlessness we're seeing. And we know in the last days, it's not going to get better. It's probably going to get worse.
Yeah, you're absolutely right. Paul talks about how lawlessness will prevail in the last days as days draw nearer and nearer to the tribulation and ultimately the return of Jesus. And we must understand that the rapture is going to happen before that. John himself says this in 1 John chapter 3, verse 4. Everyone who makes a practice of sinning also practices lawlessness. Sin is lawlessness. Friends, we live in dark, dark days where lawlessness and sin prevails, but we are called to be salt and light in the world and in the places in which God has placed us. So I'd encourage you, you have to stand for truth. You have to stand for God's word. And most importantly, you have to stand for the gospel. We are called to be his ambassadors and his witnesses where he has placed us in the times in which he has placed us. So stand firm, know the scriptures, and trust in and proclaim Jesus.
Amen. We hope you join us again next week. Until then, God bless you all. Jesus
Redeemer. Contact us through our website, olivetreeviews.org. That's olivetreeviews.org. Call us Central Time at 763-559-4444. 763-559-4444. That's 763-559-4444. You get our mail when you write to Olive Tree Ministries and Jan Markell, Box 1452, Maple Grove, Minnesota, 55311. That's Box 1452, Maple Grove, Minnesota, 55311. All gifts are tax deductible. Please visit our web store with many new and featured items at olivetreeviews.org. If you want to listen to the extended conversation, check out our YouTube channel and social media outlets. As nations gather together, the call is for peace and security. Don't be fooled. All things are falling into place.